The Bob Zadek Show on Talk 910, San Francisco's talk station.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Bob Zadek Show. I'm your host, Bob Zadek, every Sunday at 9 a.m. 9 a.m. Pacific, that is. Thanks so much for listening. I am your eponymous host, Bob Zadek. We are the only live libertarian talk radio show on the air all weekend. You have to make it through all day Saturday and early Sunday morning to get a dose of libertarian thought and conversation. We are the show of ideas, not attitude. Thanks so much for listening. 800-345-5639 is the speed-dialed way to join the conversation. This morning, I'm happy to welcome back to the show Ed Hutchins. Ed is the Director of Advocacy at the Atlas Society. Ed has spent most of his adult life in the world of libertarian, republican, governmental affairs. Ed has spent time on with Cato. He was the Director of Regulatory Studies at Cato and the editor of Regulation magazine. I'm sure you all are subscribers to Regulation. I read it regularly. It discusses regulation at the federal and state level. Pretty depressing yet important stuff. Ed has been on the Hill. He was the senior economist at the Joint Economic Committee at Congress, and he has spent time at the Heritage Foundation. Most importantly, for my friends this morning, is Ed has just edited and published the Republican Party's Civil War. Will Freedom Win? It just has come out quite recently. The Republican Party Civil War. Ed and I will discuss for the next hour what's going on in the Republican Party. Is the Republican Party doomed to wallow in the dustbin of former major political parties like the Know-Nothing Party, the Whigs, and all of the other at one time significant but ultimately insignificant political parties? Or will the Republican Party take the opportunity which it has right now to become the force in American civic life? Ed, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Glad to be with you. How's it going?
Now, Ed, civil war in the Republican Party, that's a pretty in-your-face title. What do you see as the civil war? What's going on in the Republican Party, and what's at stake?
Well, first of all, it is a civil war, and I described it that way intentionally because really there are three factions within the party. Some people like to contrast, well, the Tea Party, that side versus more responsible Republicans. That's not accurate. What you have is three factions. First of all, you have the establishment Republicans. These are the folks who don't want to get rid of the welfare state. They don't want to really change things fundamentally. They just want to make it work a little bit better. Sometimes they even want to expand it, like George W. Bush did with the prescription drug program, with the No Child Left Behind, make the government even more involved in our lives, just from a conservative or perspective, supposedly. Second,
now, Ed, just so the audience can put a face on these labels, who would or which politicians would personify that wing of the party?
Well, that wing of the party, I think, would be personified by certainly a John McCain, a Mitt Romney would certainly be one of those.
Paul Rove.
Up in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Scott Brown, who is going to probably run in New Hampshire, voted more with the Democrats, I think, than the Republicans. Those would be the kind of guys who are the establishment folks. John Sununu and people like that.
Karl Rove.
Karl Rove, I think, would be another example.
Okay, so that's the moderate, the mainstream, the establishment.
Well, they
wing
don't want to get rid of the welfare state. They just want to make government work a little bit better. You know, maybe eliminate some of the stupider programs, but they sort of acquiesce in the welfare state. A lot of them are neoconservatives and think, well, it's here to stay, so let's just make it work a little bit better. That's their view.
Okay, so that's one wing. What's the second of the three wings as you see it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the second wing is what I call the extreme social conservatives. And by the way, I would say that Rick Santorum certainly is one of the leaders. Mike Huckabee, again, is another example. These are Republicans who, you know, have a conservative worldview, often coming from their religious perspective. But here's the thing. They want that to be the priority within the GOP, opposing gay marriage, things of that sort. They want to put that social agenda first. And, in fact, in the case of Huckabee, he was quite clear about a year ago saying that if the Republican Party backs same-sex unions, or at least doesn't, give priority to his social agenda, he'll actually walk and leave the party and take with him, you know, as many of his supporters as possible. So that's the second wing of the GOP. And by the way, in many cases, and certainly if you look at Huckabee's record, you find that these folks aren't even good economic conservatives, or I would say libertarians. In other words, you take a look at them, and they often want to keep the welfare state too. They just want to tweak it a little bit to make it more towards family values. So they're certainly not hardcore free marketeers. Again, you look at Huckabee and even Santorum's record, and they're not sterling examples of free market, cut back the government type of politicians.
Now, saving the best for last, what is the third wing of the Republican Party?
Yep. This is what I would call the libertarian wing. These are more traditional Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan Republicans. These are the constitutionalists who believe that we should have a system of laws that limits government. A lot of the Tea Party folks certainly fall into this category. These folks appreciate that the current system is broken beyond repair, that the welfare state is destructive, not only of the economy, but it's destructive of the morality of a free people, the individualism that is the foundation, the moral foundation of this country. So they're not satisfied with just tweaking the system a little bit like the establishment conservatives, nor are they do they give priority to a social agenda. Some of these libertarians are actually socially liberal. Some are not. But the point is, all of them see that the priority is to cut back government, to stop the destructive effects of the welfare state before we become like Western Europe and really begin to, well, we already are in collapse. But they want to basically stop that that collapse by stopping the growth of government and rolling it back, going back to the freedom and the individualism that was the foundation of this country.
Now, Ed, you mentioned a word, to me, the most important word. You mentioned it twice, and I don't want this word to be lost on our friends out there, because it is, in my view, the most important word. And the word you said was individual and individualism. And if you want to make the comparison as simple as possible, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, indeed, libertarianism, focuses on the individual. The individual, each individual is unique. They are entitled to pursue their own goals in their own way, so long as in doing so, they do not harm another. Compare that with, for example, social conservatives, which focus on a group. It's always a group. It's Christians, it's one group or another group, it's racial groups, it's always a group. And in the moderate wing of the Republican Party, it is the most collectivist of all. There it is, the individual disappears under the boot of a strong government. And if listeners out there struggle with trying to sort out the differing philosophies, the word or the root individual is the distinguishing quality. And that's what, and what's interesting is libertarianism, and we'll get into this, Ed, libertarianism as a word never popped up in public discourse perhaps 5 years ago. Or maybe it mentioned a bit, but if you were to Google the word, it almost never appeared in political conversation. Now it appears all the time. Its time has come, and that's what's exciting, and that's what's going on in the GOP. Sorry, Ed.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right on the mark, and this is something I think that you, those of you who, by the way, you can go to Amazon and purchase a download of this book. I think it's for 99 cents. We also have a paperback copy. If you go to the Atlas Society website, www.atlassociety.org, you'll find more information about it. But what I think is one of the unique things about this book is the discussion of these fundamental principles. I mean, I go over the demographics of the Republican Party. I look at which groups they're losing. All the facts are there. I show that they're in a death spiral if they don't do some fundamental changes we can talk about later. But most important is the fundamental philosophy of the party, not just the party, but any freedom a movement. In fact, I have a chapter in there, Seizing the Moral High Ground, which offers six ways of approaching the promotion of freedom based on the notion of individualism. Because too often, people on the freedom side feel they're on the defensive. You know, the lefties will come and say, how are you going to guarantee that there are no starving children? How are you going to guarantee this, that, that? And we find ourselves on the defensive. I offer six arguments based on the notion of individualism that puts us on the offensive. We can talk about those a little bit later, but that's really it's the philosophical battle that we're in this country that's most important.
This is Bob Zadik. I'm talking with Ed Hutchins. Ed has just edited The Republican Party Civil War. Will Freedom Win? 800-345-5639 to join the conversation. Now, Ed, in the battle for the soul of the Republican Party, there is the battle exists really on two levels. First of all, you and I, in our discussions on the book, have disagreed in good nature on the title. You call it a civil war. I called it, as when we spoke the other day, on the Republican Party simply going through puberty. And what's happening is the Republican Party is discovering, has to discover, who it is. It's going through the phase, the wrong-headed, it didn't know any better phase of sort of quasi-democratic approach, collectivist approach, big government approach, top-down government as opposed to bottom-up. In case, when you hear the phrase bottom-up, bottom-up means me and you and my listeners out there. That's who the bottom-up is, and we want to control our own lives, not to have it controlled for us as the top down moderates would want. So the Republican Party is simply, we are witnessing the early adolescence of the Republican Party as it discovers how to be a grown-up party and what the country really wants. And what's interesting is the Republican Party, what we are proposing, while it makes sense to us morally, it is the right thing to do, it is also very good politics, as you have pointed out in your book, by examining the demographics.
Yeah. You know, this is a good point. I mean, this is a classic case of where the moral is, in fact, the practical. And, you know, what I point out is that there are a number of groups that the Republicans right now are losing. Certainly young people. Again, if you look at the percentage of the, you know, the 18 to 29 who voted for, say, Mitt Romney in the last election, you know, that has, the numbers have been in decline. I think Bush actually got, you know, far more of the young vote. If you look at the Hispanics, same deal. You know, the proportion of the Hispanic vote that the Republicans have got had been in decline, even as Hispanics become a bigger part of the population. I'm not talking just about illegal immigrants here, by the way. I'm talking about just people with Hispanic background who are American citizens. And most important, there is an emerging group in the last 20, 30 years of young, what I call new wealth creators, entrepreneurs, the Steve Jobs types, these young folks who are creating new industries. You know about the telecommunications and information revolution. There are private sector revolutions going on in space, in medicine, and so forth. And these folks, number one, they realize the power of human reason to change the world for the better. Two, they are individualist in the sense that they understand that the individual is the driving force behind the creation of anything. And number three, they love their work. I like to say these are people with the ethics of a Howard Roark, for those of you who have read The Fountainhead, but they still don't have the politics of a John Galt from Atlas Shrugged. And the reason why is they look at the Republican Party, and when they see the people like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, who want to impose a limited social agenda on everybody, they say, I don't want to have anything to do with this party. So there are young people, new wealth creators, Hispanics, who should be in the Freedom Coalition, you know, in this particular case, manifesting the Republican Party, who are not, because they look at the GOP and they say, these guys are a bunch of yahoos and we don't have anything to do with them. So there is where a change would be very practical indeed if the goal is to win elections and to change public policy.
And this is a one of several demographics where the Republican Party is theirs for the taking, because the Republican Party is right now open to those ideals. The Democratic Party is not at all. The Democratic Party,
right,
highly collectivist, highly discouraging of individual success, wants to take individual success and simply wealth transfers, take away from the successful under force and give it to less successful, whereas the GOP wants to create wealth. As it was once pointed out, or frequently pointed out, you don't make the poor better off by making the rich less better off. You make the poor better off by creating an environment so the poor can become better off. And capitalism and free markets is the only economic system that does that. And that system is embraced by the GOP, at least by the freedom wing of the GOP, and rejected by every wing of the Democratic Party. So that's why the GOP is so important, is the place to go for any of these visions of what America should be like. Now, the social conservatives who identify or give lip service to the Tea Party wing, the freedom wing, the small government wing, are quite hypocritical in that they want to use government to compel their social view. So on the one hand, they want small government. On the other hand, they want a very vigorous, energetic federal government to enforce their social views instead of leaving social views to the privacy of the individual. And that is that is the cancer in the GOP, and indeed the cancer in America. Not that social conservatives shouldn't have those views. They can have whatever views they wish. They should not be doing anything to impose those views upon others. And that's the cancer within the Republican Party.
No, you're certainly right about that. And what's interesting, what I try to do in this book is to parse the groups a little bit. I call them extreme social conservatives. I did it for this reason. There are social conservatives who I'm going to probably disagree with on certain issues, certainly in, you know, private morality and whatever. But they recognize that the biggest danger to them in the future, to their children in the future, is the growth of the federal government. Right now, the federal government borrows 40 cents for every dollar it spends. How long can that go on? The federal government is getting more and more involved in every aspect of our lives. We're becoming a more totalitarian state with wiretapping everybody. You see local police departments getting essentially military-style equipment as if anyone gets out of hand, we're going to have to kill them on the streets. You find, this is very serious, you find education, which is something where a real revolution is needed. You see the federal government being more and more involved in education with Common Core. This started with Bush, of course. Didn't start with Bush, but Bush continued it with his No Child Left Behind program. When will they come after homeschooling? I've got 2 3-year-olds, my darling little girls. By the way, there's one picture in my book, and it's of my 3-year-old girl.
It was a lovely picture.
I want to homeschool my little girls, okay, because I don't want to put them into government schools to get their minds warped. The federal government is going to be coming, and the local leftist governments are going to be coming after homeschooling. So if you're social conservative and you're listening to me today, I hope you appreciate that these are the real threats to you and to your family, not whether the gay couple down the street have a piece of paper in the bottom of their sock drawer that has the word marriage on it. That doesn't affect you. That doesn't limit your liberty as such, okay? You may or may not like it. That's something we can debate, but the real priority should be stopping the federal government that is trying to control every aspect of their lives. And that's my message to social conservatives, is get your priorities straight or you are going to lose and you're going to basically be ruled by the Barack Obamas of the world. So what do you want, guys?
Now, in the Republican Party, we have this the system – challenge for the Republican Party is we have this rather silly system, a system that makes no sense to me, but it is there, of the primary system, which is where each party, as we all know, selects the candidate to run against the selected candidate in the other party. And the problem is that in the primaries, the most extreme wings of both parties get out to vote. The more moderate wings don't show up generally at primaries because they just don't have the same passion. So you end up with, at the Republican side, extreme and, I dare say, unelectable candidates running for public office, which is how, in the last election, the GOP self-destructed with, as you pointed out in the book, the Sharon Angles and the Todd Akins and that crowd. And so the problem is the system is sort of silly in that the primaries do not produce, at least on the GOP, electable candidates because they are selected by the socially conservative wing. And that's one of the problems to be dealt with in the 2014 election. As I said, in an optimistic note, the Republicans are just coming out of puberty, and I think they are more mature now. And we will see in 2014 whether I am right. This is Bob Zadik. I'm talking to Ed Hutchins. Ed has written the Republican Party Civil War, Will Freedom Win? 800-345-5639. To share your observations on the future of the freedom wing of the GOP. I'll be back in 60 seconds.
The Bob Zadik Show on Talk 910, San Francisco's talk station.
Welcome back to the Bob Zadig Show. I'm your host, Bob Zadig, every Sunday at 9 a.m. Thanks so much for listening. We are the show of ideas, not attitude, the only live libertarian talk radio show in the country all weekend. Thanks so much for listening. 800-345-5639, 800-345-5639 is the speed dial way to join the conversation. I'm speaking this morning with Ed Hutchins. Ed has written an important book, The Republican Party's Civil War, Will Freedom Win? Ed discusses the importance of the libertarian wing, the growing libertarian wing in the GOP. One can wonder why there isn't an equally strong wing in the Democratic Party. Perhaps there is. They're just quiet. Who knows? The question is, will the libertarian wing of the GOP reach the dominance it has to reach in order for the GOP to remain a major political party? Ed, in describing the three wings of the GOP, one of them, of course, the first one you mentioned, was the establishment, the Boehner, Karl Rove, Mitt Romney wing. And what occurred to me as you were describing that wing, they are almost by definition the crony capitalists in America. And just as economic power has been able to affect government so that they get benefits, it's that same economic power that was able to dominate for so long the GOP. And it is not the strength of their ideas. Indeed, there is no political philosophy in the establishment wing. It's only getting elected, and it's only getting the benefits of government. There is no philosophy. Nobody wakes up teary-eyed saying, "Oh, I am such a fervent believer in the establishment wing of the GOP." Nobody grabs a placard to support that wing. They're simply in it for the money, and if not for the power. But they are philosophically bankrupt. And if you have any ideals whatsoever, if you are driven by any worldview that you cherish, there is no home in the establishment wing because it is bereft of any philosophical underpinnings. The social conservatives have a belief system. Indeed, that's what drives them. It is their fervently held beliefs. It is an emotional belief system, not an intellectual belief system. It is driven, as you said, by religion. And that's what makes it, that's the where the energy comes from. It's the energy of the Crusades, and that's what drives that wing. The libertarian wing is driven by a strong, strong philosophical underpinning that almost any that appeals, as you have said when you study the demographics, to the overwhelming majority of Americans. And that's what I think, in my view, what accounts for this, the energy in the libertarian wing. And and how consistent, as I said, there is a philosophical underpinning in the libertarian wing. But that is really, that conforms with the philosophical underpinnings of most Americans, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, I think you're right on the mark here. Just to step back for a second, remember that, you know, I've mentioned the three wings of the Republican Party, and the primary system has given us a bunch of really real turkeys from the conservative side. But remember, it also gave us Mitt Romney, and it also gave the Republicans John McCain, and it's given them a lot of these establishment Republicans as well. I would say that if the Republicans want to be very smart, one of the things they'll focus on is this crony capitalism issue. And by the way, I'm acting here. Legally, I'm not endorsing any particular candidate or anything like that. I'm with a think tank. But here's something that I think would appeal to Democrats as well as Republicans. If you look at surveys, one of the things that across party lines people are disgusted about, is the notion that we have a crony system in which people or groups of businesses prosper not because they offer goods and services to customers, but because they have political influence. The coin of the realm is political power. Whether it's Solyndra, a Democrat, friendly firm that gets almost $1 billion from the government, whether it's a Wall Street bailout, you name it.
And they are known. They are known in politics. They are known in politics.
Bipartisan corrupt form of the system. If a candidate, let's say a Rand Paul, is really smart, what they will do is say, folks, the system is broken. Every 2 years, 4 years, whatever, we are frustrated because we basically, vote for somebody who's going to support the system, and maybe they're a Democrat, maybe they're a Republican, but the system stays. What someone has to do, a smart candidate, a Rand Paul, or, I wish there were someone on the Democrat side who was saying this, is that, folks, we need to return to a system where the government doesn't have the ability to, basically back one business and destroy another with a huge handout or with a regulation that basically destroys one whole sector or one whole set of businesses and that basically favors another. That's the nature of our system, and the system itself has to fundamentally change. And I'd love to see some candidate make that a priority of discussion, because I think the appeal would be bipartisan. Independents, certainly this would resonate with independents, certainly with most Republicans, and I think with a lot of Democrats as well.
The system of crony capitalism, there's a word for it that's popped up, and that is political entrepreneurship. And that is where a business or a segment of the economy prospers not because they offer a better product at a lower price, but they prosper because they have gotten substantial protection and favors from government. And crony capitalism is eating up the economic energy in America by not rewarding quality, but by rewarding those industries and businesses that have skillful politics. And what's most important is crony capitalism transcends political parties. When the Democrats are in power, we have, as you mentioned, the Solyndras and the wind farms and the clean energy and the ethanol. When the GOP is in power, we get protective tariffs. The steel industry gets protected. Auto industry gets protected. The unions get protected. So crony capitalism, which is so sinister because it doesn't reward merit, it rewards political skill. And crony capitalism, the only wing of any party that has as part of its core undoing the system of political business corruption, crony capitalism, the only wing is the libertarian wing. Not that they have as a platform, we are against crony capitalism, but the core belief of rewarding merit, small government. Once government is small, there is less money to give out. And therefore, it makes no sense to be active politically because you can't get that much because government doesn't have that much power. So the only cure, and every listener, every voter in America has to abhor crony capitalism. You have to if you care. And the only way to undo crony capitalism and the corruption is not to vote for a candidate who says, I'm against fraud, waste, and abuse. Everybody is against that. You have to vote for a candidate who says, I am going to the heart. I am going to diminish the importance of government. And by doing that, you strike a stake into the hearts of crony capitalism. And the only wing is the libertarian wing.
I talked about a civil war within the GOP. This is in the context of even broader civil war. The United States is in a civil war. It's between the producers and the expropriators. It's between the makers and the takers. The crony capitalism issue is a major part of that. And it's a conflict between two philosophies. The philosophy says that what you get should be based on your merit, on what you produce. Another philosophy, and by the way, you take pride in the fact that you're a productive citizen versus a system that everything is determined by politics and who has the biggest club. So that's the Civil War the United States is in, and that's why I say to Republicans of all stripes, I say independents and Democrats as well, if you really are concerned about the future, you better realize the nature of the Civil War in this country, and you better side with the producers, because the only other option is basically a death spiral that is exactly what you see happening in Western Europe.
And what's most voters, or many voters in America, they tend to be, if not single-issue voters, there are certain issues, maybe one or two, that are more important to them than any other issue, and they vote on that issue. It may be abortion, it may be immigration, it may be unions, but most voters are single-issue voters. And when the social conservatives, to take them for an example, their issue is religion. And religion should not be in the political discourse. Religion is as private an issue as one could possibly imagine. What is more personal than religion? It's the most intimate and personal of all issues. It should never even be part of the public conversation, let alone be the deciding issue in a political election. And when you have, in the libertarian wing, the issue is, the guiding issue, the core, ground zero, is personal freedom. Is let me live my life, let me raise my children, let me run my life in the way that I want. And I agree, or part of the deal is, I will not harm another along the way. What's called the non-aggression principle is that I am free to do whatever I wish, so long as it does not result in my committing aggression against another. And that is the third wing of the GOP. The Democrats have no equivalent wing, which surprises me, because that's not a position that ought to be unique to one political party. It's unique to a human. Every human wants to simply live their life. And it puzzles me why there is no libertarian wing in the Democratic Party, because it's not a political issue.
Let me respond to that, because it's a very interesting question. A survey done during, I think it was Gallup, during the last election cycle, the 2012 election cycle during the spring, found that the most favorable opinion of Ron Paul, and I'm assuming now he's kind of the sort of the libertarian standard bearer, whether you agree with everything he said or not. The favorable opinions came mainly from his young libertarian supporters and young, disillusioned Obama supporters. In other words, these folks who thought Obama was a breath of fresh air, an honest politician, not someone like Mitt Romney who flip-flops on everything, and they became disillusioned. So I think that there is something there, especially among young people who back the Democratic Party because, number one, they're socially liberal and don't want to be in a party they consider to be bigoted, the Republican Party. And, because they see that at least the Democrats appear to be idealistic, though, of course, we know that they're not, and a lot of them are coming at realizations. So I think there's a few opportunities there as well for smart Republicans. Let's say a Rand Paul to come along and say, guys, I understand your frustration, and you've been sold a bill of goods, and what kind of a future do you want, you young Democrat supporters?
Now, just to put something tangible on this growing wing, the libertarian, most of the cornerstones of a freedom approach to government is in the mainstream of American political thought on both parties. It is you use the phrase socially conservative. Now, those are two words, but give us examples of what that means to be socially liberal. If one was curious if they were socially liberal or not, how would you help them understand whether they can comfortably identify with the libertarian wing of the GOP? And before you do, Ed, I just want to mention, this is Bob Zadek. I'm talking to Ed Hutchins. Ed is my guest for the entire hour. Ed has written The Republican Party's Civil War, Will Freedom Win? 800-345-5639 for questions and observations. 800-345-5639. Ed, socially liberal, economically conservative, socially liberal. What does socially liberal mean? Put a little beat on those bones.
Right. Well, in the Republican context, what socially liberal means is, first and foremost, you're really not concerned with the lie what your neighbors do, in the sense that their sex lives are their sex lives. You may like it, you may not like it, but it's just not something that you're going to sit around and concern yourself for. A socially liberal Republican is going to be somebody who, has more of a live and let live philosophy. It's pretty straightforward. And by the way, liberal doesn't necessarily mean agreement. There are certain lifestyles that I personally, Ed Hutchins, disagree with. And if we were having another show and another discussion about him, I would say this particular lifestyle is not good for you. It's not going to make you happy, and so on and so forth. But I don't have this burning desire to go out and use the government to force my view of what is a good lifestyle on other people. And that's what I think. That's what I mean. And again, if you look at young people, especially, they tend to be more socially liberal. One of the statistics, by the way, I have in the book about the demographics is that something like half of the voters in the Republican primary last year were basically white evangelicals. Again, if that's your religious belief, well, okay, that's your thing. But what you found is that if you look at the portion of the population that would be considered evangelical, I'm looking for the number right here. It's something like 29% of voters 50 to 64 are white evangelicals, whereas only 11% are unaffiliated. But if you look at voters 18 to 29, only 12% are white evangelicals, 35% are unaffiliated with any religion. And these are folks, while they probably have their, I'm sure they have their moral, their views, they're just not concerned to force their views on other people. It's just not their thing.
And so socially liberal simply means, as Ed has said, you have whatever beliefs you have, and your beliefs may be very socially conservative. This is not a question of what your own beliefs are. It's a question of how energetic you want the government to be in enforcing your belief system on other people. Or do you adopt a more live and let live approach? So libertarianism, while the word has many syllables, the concept is very simple. All libertarians want is to let people live their life, raise their families as free of government interference as is at all possible, and to keep the fruits of their labors. Now, part of the spin, libertarians are looked upon by some as being selfish. Some of it, Ed, of course, we know, comes from a misinterpretation of Ayn Rand's objectivist worldview, which is misconstrued as being selfish, not altruistic. But, of course, that's not, first of all, that itself is a privately held belief, and one can be as altruistic as you wish. We are talking about a political system where everybody makes their own decision about how altruistic to be, and the difference between the progressives and the libertarian is I reserve to myself the level of generosity and altruism I'm going to feel, and you cannot impose altruism upon me. You can't force me to be a good person. That is to conform to your view of how generous I must be. So libertarianism, while it reduces the approach to the individual, it is by no means a cruel or heartless, hardly. Heartlessness and cruelty are private points of view, which every person is free to have or hopefully not have. The point is, the government has no say in how generous or altruistic you're going to be.
Yeah, let me make two points here. First of all, you're right. I'm separating here, first of all, the political from the moral in this sense. Yes, what you do with your life is your business. So if you want to spend your off hours working in the soup kitchen, that's your business. It shouldn't be a choice of government. If you want to spend your off hours with your family, if you want to spend your off hours playing golf, or if you want to have fewer off hours so you can make a ton of money, all of those things should be your decision, not the decision of the government. But then I want to step back, because this, I think, is an important issue when it comes to selling liberty. And that is that this is where I do make I see that you do have a moral foundation to a free system, but it starts with, as we go back to that word, the individual. And I would say this: the man wrote a book called The Virtue of Selfishness, and it's been misunderstood as, you know, sort of the contrast between either someone who wants to steal from others versus someone who doesn't. That's not true. When I talk about rational self-interest, what I mean is this: every human being is a creator. We have to create the means of our physical survival, to say nothing of our spiritual well-being. Whether you're nurturing a child to maturity or a business to profitability, whether you're writing a song or a poem or a business plan or a dissertation, whether you're laying the bricks to a building, designing the building, or arranging its finances, these are all acts of creation about which you should be proud, and you should do what you love in life, what gives you the most satisfaction. And you shouldn't have to apologize and feel you have to apologize for doing those things that you love in life. That, to me, is the essence of rational self-interest. And here's the thing. If everybody in this country loved their own lives and loved their own creations the way they love their children, what would happen if somebody tried to molest my children? Well, I'd basically rip the heart out of their chest, okay? Can you imagine a system in which everybody loved their own lives, their own businesses, their own families, you know, the things that they produce, the way they love their children? No politician would dare come before them with the kind of crap that the statists do. So I'm arguing, and you can see this in the chapter on seizing the moral high ground, that to the extent that this morality of rational self-interest spreads, to the extent that people stand up and say, it's my life, I don't have to apologize to my neighbor or to bureaucrats or anybody else for what I want to do, then we would really see the return of liberty, and everybody would be enriched and educated and entertained and enlightened and inspired by their fellows. That would be a really wonderful society, and that's what we should be going for.
Now, we have only regretfully a few minutes left. What do you think is likely to happen and what do you hope will happen in the 2014, a very important midterm elections? And in a minute after that, Ed, tell us about the Atlas Society and the work that you guys do.
Yeah, well, what I believe is going to happen, I think the Republicans are going to take the Senate. And again, this is just looking at the polls, looking at the fact that Obamacare has just crashed and burned so dramatically, and looking at which Democrats are up, I think they are going to take the Senate. But again, the bigger fight, Republicans who recognize the truth of what I'm saying have to come forward, whether it's a Rand Paul or a Ted Cruz or whoever it is, and have to say, guys, we have to come together around liberty, and we have to have a new vision. The party has to have a major realignment, and if people like Huckabee, Santorum don't like it, let them walk. Stop kowtowing and pandering to these folks. That's what I think has to happen if the GOP is not to continue in a long-term death spiral.
And so the death spiral, the sentence of death, is the continued importance or relative importance of the socially conservative, the religious right wing of the GOP. That's going nowhere. This anti-immigration, somewhat racially unpleasant attitude of that wing of the Republican Party. Now, Ed, the Atlas Society. We have only a minute or two left. Tell us about the Atlas Society.
Yeah, the Atlas Society is the name implies, is named after Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand's great novel, and we promote the philosophy of objectivism. By the way, Atlas Shrugged Part 3 is going to be coming out. The movie is going to be coming out in September. Though we have a summer seminar each year. This year it's going to be up in New Hampshire in June, and we are going to have the first showing of the director's cut of the Atlas Shrugged Part 3. So anyone who's interested, come to our summer seminar, and you will be a test audience. But again, what we do is promote the philosophy of objectivism. You go to our website, www.atlassociety.org. We have lots of videos. We have lots of literature downloads. We have regular commentaries as well as conferences like the one I just mentioned. So we have Atlas University, where you can learn more about it that way. And again, if you want a copy of the book, you can go to our website, or you can go to Amazon. And I think we have a Kindle download for 99 cents, a special we're running at this moment. So you can get the Kindle download, or you can get a physical copy of the book as well. And again, by the way, our phone number is 202-EYN-RAND, clever, huh? And my email is ehudginf@atlassociety.org. If anyone wants to contact me, do so. If you like the book, post on Amazon. Post a positive comment, because that's going to help snowball the ideas in the book.
It's a great read. Thanks so
much. Get in touch.
It's a great read, Ed. Thanks so much for the book. Thanks for sharing an hour of your time with us on this Sunday morning. This is Bob Zadig. I'll be back in 60 seconds. What are we going to discuss? Gay marriage, immigration, abortion, the hot button social issues. What is the libertarian perspective? Also, license plates in New Jersey. 800-345-5639. I'll be back in 60 short seconds.
You're listening to The Bob Zadig Show, San Francisco's talk station.
Welcome back to The Bob Zadig Show. I'm your host, Bob Zadig, every Sunday at 9 a.m. Thanks so much for listening. We are the show of ideas, not attitude. 800-345-5639. The only live libertarian talk radio show on the air all weekend. This is it. 90 minutes of libertarian talk and thought. During the past hour, we spent an hour with Ed Hutchins, who has written on the Civil War in the GOP. And a major issue in American politics today, especially in the GOP, is the issue of these so-called social issues. And the statistics, the demographics are that the view that most Americans naturally gravitate towards, whether they know it or not, is the libertarian view. It puzzles me why there is no strong libertarian wing in the Democratic Party, because so much of what libertarians believe and consider to be very important is important to self-identified mainstream Democrats. For example, we have a political battle. It shouldn't be, but it is. A political battle in America over the issue of gay marriage. Now, gay marriage is quite an interesting issue. It shouldn't be a political issue, but it is. And what makes it interesting is it invites a discussion at many levels, a political discussion. The first level is it at all within the province of the federal government, to take any position whatever on marriage? Well, of course, the answer is no. Marriage, there's nothing in the Constitution remotely that regulates the institution of marriage, who can be considered to be married, other than the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, the one of the three Civil War era amendments. Before the 14th Amendment, the Constitution was generally understood to be a limit on what the federal government can do, but not a limit on what the states can do. When the 14th Amendment was adopted, it is understood to move most of the rights awarded Americans in the Constitution to as protection from the government to be protection against state government as well as federal government. So, and it says basically all citizens are entitled to equal protection under the laws, and the privilege and immunities of every citizen applies to limiting state governments as well as federal government. Okay. Gay marriage. Well, the states put themselves in the business of deciding who gets married only around 1830. Prior to 1830 in America, there were no marriage licenses. People got married in a purely religious ceremony. Now, they might have made a public record of the fact that they were married, but they did not need permission of the government. The word license, a word that I abhor, because it is a noun which means the government will permit you to do something. And where in the world does the government get the power to permit two people to declare their love and loyalty and economic union? Why is the government involved at all? But they are, as of 1830. So the government put itself in the business of deciding who gets to be married and who gets not to be married only starting in 1830. The reason is pretty nasty. The reason there started to be marriage licenses in 1830 was because women, white women, were starting to marry blacks. And that was more than the country was ready for. So the country enacted marriage licensing statutes in order to regulate who could marry who, specifically to prevent white women from marrying black men. And so the licensing statutes denied a woman the right to marry a black, a mulatto, or an imbecile. And that was the typical wording of a statute. Pretty gosh darn offensive stuff. So now the government, for the worst possible reason, is in the marriage licensing business. Should they be? Of course not. I dare say the purely libertarian approach would be get rid of the license. Since marriage is simply a relationship like becoming partners in a business. It is an economic, it is an emotional relationship. It is not the business of government. Imagine a world with no marriage license. Imagine a world where there is no legal status called marriage. There was no marriage distinction in taxes, in healthcare, in inheritance. There's no such thing. That's the libertarian world of no license. So, but now we have. Now we have the government doling out licenses to the people which government says they pass our social test and we will permit them to be married legally. Now the government gets to be the gatekeeper, which as a libertarian, I abhor. There should be no such marriage license. So now we have the issue of gay marriage. Can gays be allowed to achieve the legal status of marriage? Now, all of this, the issue of gay marriage in America, only comes about because there are marriage licenses. If there were no such thing as marriage, there's legally, there's no reason to want to be married in the legal sense. Of course, you don't change legal status. It's not an economic or legal issue at all. It's simply a private issue. And if people want to live together, they're free to live together and have an economic relationship, an emotional relationship, have children, whatever they want to do, they are free to do so without the permission of government. And that's the libertarian world. But we have the license. Unfortunately, government is in the business of giving licenses, and that's not likely to change. So now there is competition as various groups, most recently gays, they say, we want in. We want to get that license as well. So therefore, the fight becomes, does the Constitution and the Equal Protection Clause deny states the right, sorry for the double negative, of giving a marriage license, this exalted legal status of marriage, to homosexual couples, to same-sex couples? And that's the issue before the courts. A minority so far of states are recognizing gay marriages. More are on the way. What's most interesting is this is a purely libertarian issue. It is not a Democratic or Republican issue as such. It is a freedom issue. It is a get government out of the way. So if, and it's important we understand this, because when one talks about freedom and liberty and less government intrusion, those are abstractions. And what I hope to be able to do is to convert this abstract concept into something we can understand and we can identify with and something we hear about all the time in the paper. So the libertarian view, the majority view, is that ideally get rid of the concept of marriage license, just get rid of it. And get rid of every question on every application that says marital status. Get rid of it. It's irrelevant to your legal relationship to each other and to the government. And just have people live their lives the way they want. If that sounds like the kind of world you would like to live in, then welcome to the club. You have at least libertarian leanings. And for the social conservative wing of the Republican Party to oppose gay marriage is wrongheaded legally, it's wrongheaded politically, it's wrongheaded socially, and it is simply trying to use government to enforce your religious or social views upon another. And as we leave the subject of gay marriage, lest there are callers who wish to discuss it, as we leave the subject of gay marriage, those people who oppose gay marriage do so because it weakens the family. My goodness, what a intellectually bankrupt point of view. How in the world can the fact that a same-sex couple identify themselves as marriage, how in the world does that weaken your different sex marriage? How does it affect you at all? The answer is it, of course, does not. So that is the type of issue that is destructive in the practical political level in the GOP, and it's destructive. It's not what America ought to be fighting about. It's not the subject that should be part of the public discourse in America. Next issue. So the second of the three hot-button, important social issues in America is, of course, immigration. Immigration is another issue where the socially conservative wing of the GOP tends to be, this is oversimplistic, but I'll explain, anti-immigration. They disguise their point of view by saying, we support protecting the borders first. We can deal with liberalization of immigration rules second after we protect the borders first. What a lot of nonsense. Protect the borders against what? Does anybody believe that by protecting the borders, they are talking, they being social conservatives, are talking about the southern border, the border that borders between America and Hispanic Central and South America? That's the border they are talking about. And it is, I dare say, there is an ugly racial undertone to that. There is a xenophobic undertone to that, and a dislike of other cultures coming into America, indeed, in the view of the social conservatives, dominating American culture so that our culture changes, as if there is a culture other than a melting pot culture, which is the only American culture. And that is what drives the social conservatives on immigration. A libertarian looking at the subject of immigration, at least one libertarian, me, I say the right to travel, the right to move from place to place is as core a value as and a manifestation of liberty as I can possibly imagine. You have to, one must have a world where people are free to travel to try to improve the lot of themselves and their family. And for us Americans to discourage that travel of these residents of foreign countries into America is, it's painful, it's sinful to me. It's painful. We should, the immigrants who come to America are the ultimate entrepreneurs. We give lip service in America to favoring entrepreneurship. The supreme entrepreneurs in America, from the standpoint of this one libertarian and most of my colleagues, is these are the ultimate entrepreneurs. An entrepreneur is somebody who gambles his fortune, his time, his life, his well-being, gambles that with the confidence that he has an idea and that he's going to be right and he's going to succeed. He's in effect betting very high stakes on his own skill, determination, and his own being. That describes an immigrant. An immigrant gambles more than any Silicon Valley entrepreneur who bets some money, spends some time, and hopes they're going to make a lot of money. An immigrant takes his family, often with nothing, comes to America, betting only that his determination to work hard and his faith in the American system will result in a better life for himself, more importantly for his family. What is more entrepreneurial than that? Those the immigrants who come here, it's not random. It's only those people with the determination to make their lives better for themselves and their families, and their willingness to work hard and their confidence in themselves. Those are the people we want in America. Libertarians welcome them. The social conservatives, those people, and of course the Democrats, probably because it's politically expedient, give lip service to protecting the borders first. They do not represent a freedom, a liberty view of America. So in looking at the second of the three important issues of immigration, libertarians represent, I dare say, the majority view. My view is four words: let them all in. Welcome them. America will be the better for it. But even if we are not, we have the moral obligation to provide this haven, this place for people to exercise the freedom of movement, to come here to America and to give their families a shot, more of a shot than they had in the country of their birth. So the libertarian view on immigration and the view expressed by most libertarians in public life and most Americans is a version of let them all in. And before we leave immigration, a word has become almost a pejorative in the discussion of immigration, and that is amnesty. How did amnesty, a very generous, open-hearted word, how did the word amnesty become a pejorative? As in, what do we do about the 11 million illegal immigrants in America? What do we do about them? Do we, as Romney wanted, have them self-deport? Oh, Romney, shame on you. Do we have them voluntarily pack up and leave with their families, self-deport? What kind of man would suggest that? Romney did, a moderate Republican. What do we do about the 11 million immigrants who are here? The only thing to do, the libertarian solution, would be, of course, amnesty. Now, there are those on the social conservatives would say they broke the law. You can't give them amnesty. You encourage lawlessness. You can't reward people who didn't, quote, play by the rules, to use a Clinton-esque expression. They didn't play by the rules. They came in here illegally. We can't reward them. Amnesty is a perfectly appropriate governmental policy. Two examples. When Prohibition was repealed, 12 years after it was enacted in 1935, I believe, we still had a lot of Americans who had broken the law and transported, manufactured, or sold alcoholic beverages while it was illegal. Should we have, after the repeal of Prohibition, should we have prosecuted all of those Americans who broke the law? Well, of course not. Why not? Well, remember, they broke the law when it was illegal because we recognized the law made no sense. It was a law that was not popular, and therefore, of course, we didn't prosecute them. In other words, we gave them amnesty. Did that encourage lawlessness in America? Of course not. Second case in point, taxing authorities often at the state level have tax amnesty programs where they tell Americans, we know you cheated on your taxes. come forward, confess, pay your back taxes, and will not prosecute them. And the money rolls in. Amnesty. Amnesty is a perfectly appropriate governmental program. It's not a negative word. We should give amnesty to the 11 million illegal immigrants in this country right now. And the issue of illegal immigrants goes away because with the stroke of the pen, they become legal. And they're no longer illegal immigrants. They now are legal immigrants because we made them legal. And the issue goes away, never to be discussed in America anymore, because it has gone away. The way to make illegal immigrants, the way to make the problem of illegal immigration go away, is to simply remove the illegal part of it and make them legal. That is the libertarian approach. It is an approach that is discussed a bit among Democrats, but not much. And most Republicans tend to favor it. 100% of the libertarian wing of the GOP favors it. The third hot-button issue is, of course, abortion. Abortion doesn't go away. Abortion is discussed in America on the level of constitutional law. What is the law? What does the Constitution say or not say about abortion? And how would a libertarian view the issue of abortion? Highly complex issue, of course. Social conservatives, in the extreme, the so-called religious right, of course, they oppose all forms of abortion because it contradicts their religious beliefs. They are entitled to their religious beliefs, of course, but to impose it by criminalizing abortion, if abortion is otherwise lawful, is wrongheaded, and that is simply using big government, using the force of government to impose your own personal views. Now, to me, as a libertarian, abortion is simple with one asterisk. As to the early term abortions, and I will somewhat arbitrarily describe that as the first two trimesters of pregnancy, probably, and I'm trying to make a medical ethical decision, the fetus is not a, in my view, and I'm struggling because I'm not a doctor and I'm not a medical ethicist, but as I see it, the fetus is not a citizen. Somewhere in the third trimester of pregnancy, the fetus becomes a citizen. It becomes a human, not separated from the womb, of course, but a human, and therefore is worthy of protection. And therefore, struggling as I do to try to apply consistent lawful principles, I say once the fetus becomes a citizen, then it is worthy of protection of the state, and its life cannot be snuffed out lawfully. I struggle with it, but what I'm trying to do is explain how a libertarian would look at the issue, not from a moral standpoint, but simply from the standpoint of protecting American citizens from the harm to be done to them by another. It is, by all means, a tough issue. The important point being, it is not an attempt to impose a moral view on another. The only moral view is you don't kill a viable person. That's more of a legal view than a moral view, but that's how I would approach it as a libertarian. So these issues, the libertarian view of these important social issues, are strikingly mainstream in America. It transcends party affiliation. These are views that in each of the three instances I've explained, respect the rights of the individual. The individual is important, and all the rights granted to us by the Constitution are rights given to us as citizens. And we, under the contract in the Constitution, we only give government those rights or those powers that we choose to give. The government does not give us the rights, give us our rights. We start with all the rights and we cede only a portion of them to the government. We have a minute left. One little amusing note from New Jersey. The New Jersey DMV denied the license plate atheist to a woman who wanted that as her vanity license plate. They denied it on the basis that that would be offensive to some people. Should the government make a decision what license plates are offensive to people, or is that yet another abuse of power by our all-seeing, all-controlling government? It was an amusing fight. In my mind, the woman who was denied the license plate is now suing the New Jersey DMV for the right to have atheist on her license plate. What strikes me as being so utterly silly is this same woman could put a bumper sticker on her car that said atheist or any other offensive bumper sticker she might want. Not that atheist is offensive, and nobody would care. Why in the world does government care about what you choose to put on your license plate? If you want to have something really offensive, have at it. Of course, your car will be keyed in every parking lot in America if it's too offensive, but that's your call. But should the government be deciding what goes on a license plate based upon some view of some DMV bureaucrat on what is offensive and what is not? Of course not. This is, once again, an amusing, fairly unimportant way to end a show on a pretty heady topic. We are always watching for abuses of government, and we'll bring them to your attention if and when they arise. This is Bob Zadik. I've enjoyed my 90 minutes with you. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next Sunday, 800-345-5639. Put it in your speed dial. See you next Sunday.